And now it's time for the best of English.
Hello, this is Michael Poynton on stage at London's Paris studio, introducing a man who's entertained us from the 40s through the 80s. Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur English.
Good evening, Michael. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Back. Well, we ended last week with you being taken on as a comic at London's Windmill Theatre.
That's right.
Now, for the benefit of listeners under 40, could you tell us what sort of theatre the Windmill really was?
Well, as I'm only just 40 myself, it'll be a bit difficult. Yes, the Windmill was what they call Revue de Ville, and it was six shows a day. They had, of course, a lot of nudes there, which was a bit difficult because I didn't quite like that. I did an audition and I was thrown into the Windmill. I was scared stiff. My father didn't want me to go. No. He said, son, you shouldn't go there because when you get to that Windmill, you're going to see things there you shouldn't really see. And he was right. On the first day, I saw him sitting in the front row. But that's how it worked. It used to be six shows a day. In fact, well, I was there, I suppose, just under 2 years. And in that time, I did 2,664 shows.
And you really became famous overnight. I mean, the publicity really got hold of you at that time. What did it feel like?
Well, you were numbed, completely numbed, you see, because they were actually short of one of the sketches. I hadn't been successful on the previous day when it opened. And so they needed something to fill in, and I was put in straight away. But they jumped on the fact that I'd gone straight into the show for publicity. Well, that's good. We both scored. You see, I got 50% and the Windmill got 50%. The Nationals came in, and as I say, I was a painter and decorator, so I'd do my act and then I'd come off and then they'd put a painting coat on me and a paintbrush and take photographs. Then I'd take and I finished that. I didn't know whether it was Good Friday or Egypt. I was chased all over the place. And then after about the fourth show, Mr. Van Damme said to me, he said, I'll book you day for day. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, I'll give you £3.10 a day, and if you're a success, you can come back tomorrow. So I said, well, do you want me to come back tomorrow? He said, I haven't gone to all this trouble there just for one day. You just go home when you're finished, and I'll see you tomorrow morning. And I was in cuckoo land. I didn't know where I was coming or going, honestly.
And your old boss still kept your job open,
yes,
didn't
indeed.
He?
That was a bloke called Caesar. Mm. And the press phoned all the shot to the Caesar brothers to find out if, because I suppose I've been painting the YMCA ceiling in Borden. I'd come up with the wife, you see, for this audition. And so they said to me, what do you do? Because they thought it was a gag. And he said, your name is English. I said, yes, that's right. This was David Lewin from the Daily Express. I said, yes, that's right. He said, and you are a painter and decorator. I said, yes, that's right. And you work for Caesars. Do you have his telephone number? So I said, yeah. So I gave him the telephone number. I said, Mr. Jack Caesar. So I see. In the end, we got through to Jack, and they explained it to him, and he said, well, wish him good luck, because I'd lost a quid, you see, by going up there. He said, wish him good luck, and tell him if it doesn't work out, his job's waiting for him on Saturday, which is very nice.
Yes.
And to jump ahead, when they did This Is Your Life on me in 1978, I think it was, Jack Caesar came in, and he told this story, you know. And I said to him at the time, I said, because that was on the Wednesday, and I didn't go back, you see. And I said, did you ever pay me for the other 3 days?
Were they the same people that built your new house then, Arthur?
That's right, yes, indeed, yes. I worked for them for a long time, and then finally they built my house for me, yeah. That's right.
Back to the Mill, things were going on and you were very famous, but I believe Van Damme was quite a tough character and he tried to censor your act. How did that work?
I used to finish up with this gag mentioning a chamber pot, you see. And he said to me, I'm sorry, son, but you're not allowed to do that. This is a clean show. Can you imagine? You weren't allowed to do it. It was a lovely gag. I think I can remember it. Me and my mate, Ali, we were having a smashing time. We went out the other night, stayed in one of these hotels. Block classy place. You want to see the bedroom? They've got sheets on the bed. Sheets. None of your newspaper lark. Sheets. They're all laid out. And I turned to my mate, Ali. I said, hey, shuffle you the sheets. He said, yeah, play the game. I said, boots off tonight. So I take my boots off. No, I take my boots off. I've got nowhere to put them. There was no ashtrays, no coat hangers. There's only one place left, underneath the bed. So I shoved him underneath to bed, talk about the bowels of China, and I turned to my mate, Ali, I said, what do you make of it? He said, well, don't look for, you never find out, do you? So he went down, picked it out and held it up. He said, what do you make of that? I said, I don't know, but I bet and I've got a big saucer. he said, I know what it is. It's what the posh people have. It's a nightcap. I said, well, if it's a nightcap, shove it on your bonce. He put it on his head. He didn't half look potty. He looked like a soldier with a tin helmet on. He'd been laying in bed about half an hour and he jumped up. He said, listen, mate, nightcap, well, no nightcap, it ain't comfy. So I switched the candle on and I turned around and said, of course it ain't comfy. Look, you've got the bow at the back. Anyway, that was the joke. And Van Damme would not allow me to mention that. So I couldn't mention Chamber Pot. So all I did, I got this because it was six shows a day, remember? Same people sitting in there morning, noon and night. They were there, bring their sandwiches all along the front row. So I used to get as far as, and I got my boots, I threw them underneath the bed, and I looked in the audience and I'd say, you'll be here next house, won't you? I'll tell you then. And just walk off. And that's what I
Well, doing so many shows, didn't you sometimes forget how many you'd actually done during the
blimey,
day?
Oh, blimey, yes. Well, this happens all the time. And I know one occasion I'd finished because I used to make a dive to get the train from Aldershot. I was catching the train at 10:15 in the morning from Aldershot, getting up ready to do the show at 12 o'clock and then getting 10:15 at night, getting into Aldershot about midnight. You know, I was really, I'm a neat instrument. And I know I came across one night, took my makeup off, tore down the stairs, said goodnight to the old keeper, rushed down to Piccadilly, into the underground, gave the bloke the ticket. He said, God, blimey, you're early tonight, governor, yeah? I said, hey, what? Oh, God, it's another performance. I'd only done five. I ran back. And old Ben at the door, silly old sausage, he said, I thought you was a bit early.
You were saying earlier that gag about seeing your father, the old story,
yeah.
But there was some...
The old story?
I've heard it...
I've never told that one before, the brand new story.
I don't mean old in the sense that you've told it, but it's a Folies Bergère gag. But the other one is, you actually did see people who shouldn't be at the windmill, didn't you? Various faces, regulars down there that didn't like you seeing them. Is that right?
Now, we're going to get a bit tricky here. Yes, there was a certain dignitary at home, actually, in my hometown, who used to come and sit in the front row of the windmill. And like a lot of people, you know, they think that you can't see in those lights. Well, I could see about five rows back. And I used to see them sitting down there, yes. And I know I went to one function at home, and this particular person used to didn't have a lot of time for me because I was a rather common actor, you know, a variety, loudmouth spiv, and so he didn't have a lot of time for me. And on one occasion we were together and he was talking, I couldn't resist it. I called him aside, I said, did you enjoy the show yesterday? And he'd been a great pal of mine ever since. But you know, it's funny how you did see those front rows, because I was in the tube coming to work on one occasion and there was a guy sitting opposite me in the tube, and I went, all right, I know him. God, what's his name? And I thought, you know, because I'm a big star now, you see. I'm getting 20 quid a week. And and I thought, if it's somebody I should know, and he said, old Arthur's getting big-headed, he wouldn't talk to me, ignored me. So you've got to be nice, haven't you? So I said, all right, great day, lovely, nice to see you again. And the bloke just stared at me. I thought, well, please yourself. And I go into the theatre, of course, make up, go and do the first show. What? He's one of the front rows with his Mac over his head.
Lots of great comic characters worked at the Mill. Tell us a bit about your friend Tommy Cooper.
He shared a dressing room with me, Tommy, and he was doing six shows a day at the Windmill and two shows a night at the Churchill nightclub. And, what a character. He'd come in and he'd say, oh, I've got to write to the wife. Write the wife. Hang on, I'm going out tonight. And he was so lost. I mean, he used to do a lovely gag with a skull. He used to have this beautiful skull. You do a Yorick sort of thing and hold up this skull. And he used to do this lovely gag and he used to the audience say, yeah, you see the skull? You see the skull there? That's the skull of one of my very good friends. Great friend of mine. Great fella. And he'd pick up another little tiny skull. He'd say, see that one? That's the skull of the same man when he was a little boy.
Thank you.
There's another nice round of applause. That's not for me, that's for Tommy.
For Tommy.
Yeah.
And another comic who's left us that, who was really funny was Mrs. Shufflewick. Tell us a bit about him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Shuff. Oh, Rex. He didn't up like his wallop.
Oh, Rex Jameson.
Lovely. Because later on, he's like his port, you know.
Yes.
I remember the lovely story of his. He said, do you know, lads, I came home the other night. He said, I was late. I didn't want to disturb anyone. And I crept nice and quiet. I got on the stairs and I could stare one step at a time. And as I'm going up, I got my tie off. A bit farther up, I get my jacket off, and I get my shirt off, and I'm just going into the bedroom, and I take my trousers off, I've got my trousers over my arm, I'm just going in top, and I'm on the top deck of the number 29 bus.
Of course, with all these great people around you, you were building your act, and how did that develop, the way it really became so keenly honed and built, the way you did it?
You mean the finishing of it, really? Yes. Well, as I say, I was at the Windmill and I got all my eggs in one basket. I mean, all the gags I'd ever done were there for that one act. And so I'd hit and made an impression. Well, Van Damme, at the end of the six-week run, or used to go away for a couple of weeks on the continent while they produced and prepared the next show. And he said to me, now, I'm going away now, lad. Don't sign anything, don't do anything, wait till I come back, I want you to do an act next time. So, of course, I'm thinking, you know, this is great, I'm going to do another 6 weeks. And then when I start thinking about it, I thought, well, what am I going to do? I haven't really got an act. So I collected a few gags together and got a few ideas there, and I thought, well, I can't do this bit about the nightcap, you know, you'll be here next hour, so I've got to find a different way of finishing. And I was with my wife in the front room there where we were living, and I go through these gags, you know, doing it with her, and then I got to the end, and I thought, well, I've got to finish somewhere. Now, in the army, I used to do a sort of a COD speech, and I would say, well, you see, ladies and gentlemen, the point is, it's quite simple, because it doesn't make the slight, because it is always upside down until the point comes, as the wind goes into the easterly direction. You see, with a high poly, you go, ha, and it doesn't half come up, because you don't take it too tight. You see, well, if you find that you're going down, and the tires are coming, and I use, well, and my wife is laughing, and she said, that's funny. So I said, all right, I'll try that. So that'll be my finish. But I did it all at the speed of light because I was so nervous. And this was at the dress rehearsal, and I did this, and I'm going and going and going, I'm thinking, this is great, but how the hell do I finish this? You know, and then from nowhere, I suddenly stopped and I said, I don't know what the devil I'm talking about. Play the music, open the cage, and that was it.
<You know. laughs> Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur English.
That was The Best of English, in which Arthur English has been looking back on life's ups and downs with the help of Michael Poynton. Best of English is produced by Edward Taylor.